faced. There's nothing we can do to stop that. I'll find out who you are and where you're led. And then I'm gonna kill you.
Welcome to TV Flashcast for Sons of Anarchy. I'm Lisa Schmeiser, erstwhile recapper for Television Without Pity, now over here on TV. And with me is the eclectic and eidetic Philip Mozeliak.
That's right. And I've been wanting to do this forever, and yet I didn't know about it until I kind of knew about it. I made one little mention to Jason Snell, and boom, here we are.
And Snell said, I know somebody who is unreasonably nuts about this show. And he connected us on Twitter. It was a tweet match. We've already done one podcast together on your excellent movie cast.
Yes, we did on The Preservation State, and it was one of the top episodes we've ever done.
It's phenomenal. We'll link to that later, too. Anyway, the point of a flashcast is Philip and I will give you quick recaps and reactions to the episode of Sons of Anarchy that aired this week, in which case this was Season 7, Episode 1, Black Widower. Philip, if you had to describe this episode in one word, how would you describe it?
I wanted to say lies, and then I just have to say changes.
Okay, that's your word?
It's got to be it.
So changes is your word.
It has to be.
Let's see. Well, funny, because mine was stasis. So we're coming at this from exactly opposite directions.
Which is what we want.
And that's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's okay. And also, another note about flashcasts, we respect your time. And more importantly, unlike Kurt Sutter, we know when to get to the point and make it snappy. So this podcast won't be more than 20 to 25 minutes long on any given week.
Burn.
Yeah. Okay. Now, here is the first challenge that we've set for the podcast, is I attempt to explain what happens in the entire episode in a minute or less. I have a timer on my desktop set for 1 minute, and I will hit it starting now.
Boom.
The episode picks up approximately 10 days where the season 6 finale left off. Jax's wife, who was killed by his mother, has been buried. The funeral was planned by his mother. She says it was a lovely, understated affair. Jax's children are being cared for by a variety of crow eaters. He refuses to go see them. There's a lot of complicated psychological reasons for this, none of which are explored in the excruciating 2 hours that it took to get to this point. Jax pulls out some dude's teeth and carves a swastika onto his chest because he wants to date Marilyn Manson or at least make sweet, sweet prison matchups. Then he and the rest of his boys spend a lot of time motoring around assuring people that they don't want to kill them. These people include the Mayans, Lin's Chinese gang, and the Grim Bat. Who am I forgetting? Long story short, Juice is hiding in Wendy's closet. She finds out when she comes home from rehab, and Juice keeps Unzer hostage. We also find out that when he's bored, he cleans houses, so we need to send him my way. He does naked push-ups, and I have 2 seconds left. Boom!
That was absolutely fantastic.
Excuse me. Yeah. 15 years of recapping. You think I would get it down to the science. Anyway, you and I both have some show notes. I went through, and you did too. Let's talk teeth super quick.
Okay. Now, for some reason, I got into the mindset. Look, I'm going to be battling Lisa on the show a little bit, and I figured I got to bring my A game. So immediately we come into Jax just absolutely beating a guy to a pulp. We don't know why.
I don't know where he got the duct tape. That's what I want to know.
There were some issues with that, and I understood that we were trying to see that Jax is kind of frustrated. He's obviously going to take it out on a guy. We don't know why, but then he goes and pulls not one but two teeth out of this guy's mouth. Now, I mean, I'm not, you know, I can take out my kid's teeth, no problem, but a full grown man's teeth, I mean, it's a different story. But now I looked online and I tried to look at what's the reference of pulling teeth. So I come up with a dream analysis off the Googles, which pulling teeth is a representation of painful transitions.
Oh, that's genius. And you know what? That actually ties into the comic book that you and I were talking about. There's a series called The Witching, which is available. was available on Vertigo. The name of the author is eluding me, but among one of the central introductions in that series, a witch is systematically dreaming about her teeth being pulled out, and it does presage tremendous transitions. I think you're onto something.
Well, I think Sutter just used a referencing in there just to kind of, you know, if we didn't get it already, now if we look deeper, okay, well, we know Jax is going to be upset. I mean, who wouldn't be?
I like how delicately you put that. Well, we know he's upset.
Right.
You know, what the two scenes that devastated me were the Tyne Patterson scenes. The first one was when she's talking to Jax. And she mentions, you know, my own son got killed by gang violence, and I really had to wrestle down the urge to commit vengeance and instead, like, remember that I live in a society with laws. And what that kind of reminded me of was the Sopranos episode Employee of the Month, where Dr. Melfi gets raped, and she makes the decision not to say anything to Tony because she recognizes that he would take care of the rapist for her. But if he did that, what she'd be doing is rejecting everything that, quote-unquote, straight or polite society has to offer. So this is basically a less subtle version of that, but it's knocked out of the park by CCH Pounder. It's Patterson saying, look, you have a choice. You can continue to try to become part of society, or you can set yourself against it. Ask yourself which is the correct choice to make.
And I thought it was a throwaway scene at first,
mm-hmm.
because I was like, okay, you're going to bring up your dead nephews. I mean, wait, yeah. Hold on. And then she stops and comes back.
Yeah, and she pleads with him, basically, as much as this character is ever going to plead.
You were going to do the right thing 10 days ago.
Yeah, she's like, for your sons, you were going to do it. You know, you were going to do this for Tara. And then that's actually how she gets to Unser later, when she comes to visit him. And nearly the first words out of her mouth were, Tyra deserved better. And that actually hits Unser right where he lives, because he agrees. And this gets the wheels turning for him, where he's like, well, she deserves better than to have a husband who is going to use her death as a cheap excuse to kill anybody he wants to anyway. Because you have to admit, there's a tiny calculating part of Jax that loves to justify his actions and wrap them in more meaning than they should actually have. Like when he kills Opie's killers, he didn't have to kill them so brutally. He didn't have to kill the wife, but he's like, oh, this is for Opie. Like there's a really sociopathic killing streak in Jackson. He loves to indulge that. And I think he's going to do a lot of that this season too.
Well, and I've always noticed, and this has always been kind of one of my major issues, and the only person that seems to have some sort of conscience that where we all do murders. There's not anybody in there except for Happy, who just loves it.
Yeah.
But no one seems to ever fess up to the guilt of it, except for Juice, only when it's a complete innocent.
And look look at how wrecked he is. Let's hop to Juice. I think we can agree that Jax is on a dark road this season, and it's just a question of exactly how grim it's going to get. Let's hop to Juice, the naked push-ups, the compulsive rearranging of Wendy's house, the fact that Gemma has him sticking around and hiding out in an apartment instead of helping him get the hell out of Dodge.
Yeah, and well, first of all, I don't get what is it with the whole naked push-ups thing? I'm not sure exactly. Is it just I got time on my hands, I don't care?
Maybe it's a CrossFit thing, I don't know.
And you kind of brought up the whole idea, is Juice straight?
Yeah. No, I don't think he is. Because if you think about it, they reference him having had a girlfriend at some point, but off screen. You've never really seen him do anything more than feign polite flirtation. He got dragged in by Nero's sister. I can't remember the name of that character. Like, she drags him back to the back, and he's like, oh, fine, whatever. But you know, he's a young, healthy man. He has his pick of every skank in the San Joaquin area. Why don't we see him aggressively pursuing more women? And I think the answer is he doesn't really want to.
I tend to agree. And it didn't really dawn on me until I saw it in your notes. And, like, even the first time we meet Venus Van Dam.
Oh, God. Tig's reaction to her is the best.
Exactly. But if you when they're talking to the young boy that walks in,
Yeah.
It's Juicy's like, oh, yeah, a lot of cock.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, I, though it seemed all funny, it just, mm-hmm. there's something that definitely Juice has a definite kind of almost a feminine quality about him.
And he's got a big aversion to getting involved, too, because remember there's that crazy girl who bashed in Jax's windows? And later Jax is like, well, she can work off her debt by working around the candy shop. And here, you also, and in this episode, I'm circling back, I promise, but in this episode, you see her once in the very beginning, she's washing dishes at the sink, and she and Rat give each other some very flirty eyes as he heads out the door. So, you know, we're given evidence that Rat is going there, or Rat is going to go there. But last season, Gemma's like, oh, she's cute, and Juice is all, yeah, and she's also crazy, I don't want any of that. And it's pretty much my mental backstory is he's picky, or he tries to be picky so that people are like, oh, that's Juice, he's picky, this is why he doesn't have a girlfriend, and this is a plausible way for him to live as closeted a life as he can as a biker.
Because obviously now, where did Wendy find him? In the closet.
Oh, that's awful. Yeah, well, she did. She found his backpack and his cut, and the Unser did too. So,
well, first of all, can we go to Unser for a second?
Yeah, because we were there with Tyne Patterson, where she basically reminds him that he used to have a conscience, and he's like, yeah, you know, even back in season one, he's like, every once in a while, I have to pretend to follow the law, and now he's getting back to that, where he's like, I've thrown in my lot with a bunch of people who murder their women when it's inconvenient, and what is this bull?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, and I think he started to talk, when he was talking with the Joaquin Sheriff, San Joaquin Sheriff, and mm-hmm. and they had that a moment last season where it was
I love Roosevelt,
right, and he's just like, you know, I've done some things, I want to be a cop again, I have some ideas, and I think honestly, first of all, he sees Gemma for who she is, but he's able to, I think he really wants to make one last saying a mark on the land, if you will, before he dies, and mm-hmm. saying, I was a good man. I did something right.
I disagree about your take on him and Gemma. He has loved the idea of her for forever, but because he's so deep in denial, he has not put it together that, hey, Gemma comes over and falls apart on his lap the same night that Tara is killed, roughly around the same time that she's killed. Isn't that a suspicious connection? Like, that hasn't come through yet. I think he's deep in denial. I think he knows who kills Tara, and he's deep in denial over it. What? I think he's going to let him. I think what he's going to happen is he's going to let himself be drawn down the blind alley that Juice did it, and so he's going to turn Juice over to the club, and that's his big moral moment. I think Gemma will be okay with this because it gets her off the hook, and then I think she'll say or do something, and Unser will realize that holy cap, I've been sheltering. I've been this woman I love killed her daughter-in-law, and I can't live with this. This woman took away two children's mothers, and this isn't the person I love. And there'll be a big, I'm sorry, Jim. And either she'll kill him or he'll walk away from her. But this season ends with the two of them permanently separated in some way.
Okay. You've flipped my perspective completely. You've made the argument. I'm satisfied.
Yay!
Yeah. Point.
Yeah. What I want to point out, you pointed out Nero drinking a beer again.
Yes.
And that was a great subtle pickup. I didn't pick that up the first time I saw it because he used to be.
He did not drink the beer. He didn't even open it.
Oh, he didn't. He just held it?
Exactly.
Okay, because what I was going to say is if he's drinking, this is just more proof that everybody Gemma touches, she corrupts. There is literally nobody on this show who is better off for knowing Gemma Teller anywhere along the line. And I think also we should do a death scoreboard. I think Lila's going to be in trouble this season because they're setting up Lila to be the next Luann, down to being an entrepreneur and having that sisterly camaraderie with Gemma. And by the way, go back to like season one and watch the interactions between Luann and Gemma sometime. They will break your heart. But I think what's going to happen is Lila's the next Luann, and either this shows you how the club perpetuates its cycles no matter how hard you try to get out of them, or it shows you that as the next Luann, Lila is doomed. Either way, it's not going to end well for this poor woman.
Well, and look, in the episode's called Black Widower, but really mm-hmm. Gemma is the Black Widow. And if Gemma had never gotten hooked up with Nero could have been doing what he had always set out to do, which was setting up
his
son.
Ranch, get his son. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she poisons everything she touches.
And
that's
the
thing.
And Nero may be, he may end up being our best guy.
Yeah.
In a sense, our goodest guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's playing this role of, and he even says it, the politician.
Yeah. And, well, I also thought that was a sly shout out to his West Wing role, because he's basically as far away from that character as possible. But
that's an interesting connection.
And they mentioned Borofsky last night. I loved Borofsky. And you know what? Borofsky is the only character in the history of this show to say, "You were such bad news. I want nothing to do with you guys. I'm really glad our business is concluded." Like, he's got the survival instincts of a shark, and I loved it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if Borofsky. Yeah. Oh yeah. I wonder if we're going to just see. I wonder if we're going to see Borofsky, or if they're just going to reference him as somebody who, yeah, Borofsky's keeping us at arm's length. Yeah, Borofsky's not helping us, but he's not hurting us. Because, you know, this again, Jax wreaks havoc wherever he goes, and then he does the speech at the table where he's all, "I never really wanted this chair, but I have to embrace it. I have to embrace my nature. Blah blah blah." And that's why I think this whole season is about stasis, because no matter how hard anyone tries to change, they all kind of devolve back to the, to their most base state.
And see, that's I am, because, you know, like, I've watched as from season one to now, and I've looked at evolution of certain characters that are still alive. That would be, you have,
I feel like that's an important caveat.
It is, because, like, in a sense, Tiggs was always the, he was the right hand to Clay, and he has devolved into more of a softy now.
Yeah, do you remember that moment in season six where he and Rat are on the neo-Nazi farm, and they're like, "Well, why do you want to join us?" And Tig is like, "Because I can still smell my daughter, the way my daughter's flesh smelled when she burned." And it was just this crazy, unfiltered, raw moment. And the first time I heard it, I was like, "Ho!" And I thought, well, Tig has also been kind of the clown prince of the club in a lot of ways. Like, they expect him to be a pervert, and they expect him to be, you know, irreverent, and they expect him to be, you know, kind of casual about killing. And I don't think anyone ever seriously considers that this is a dude who still processes stuff.
He really does. And like, for the example, even when they go to the dog fights, and he loses himself, and it seems as though Jax even knows that he will not be okay with seeing dogs hurt.
Yeah, no, that's kind of, I think they established that earlier, that Tig is a sucker for. Oh yeah, they did, because Tig and Kozik, their big falling out was over their shared quote unquote old lady, which was a dog.
That's right.
So, you know, this is kind of, dogs are Tig's hot spot.
Well, see, and I hadn't watched The Shield, and I literally watched all the seasons of The Shield over Labor Day, and
my God, how are you speaking English? That show is so brutal.
It really is, but I use that as a template to maybe guide me on what's going to happen in this trajectory. You know, what does Sutter do? What did he miss? What did he want to do? And but some of those characters, you know, obviously have come back. And CCH Pounder is just absolutely.
Oh, she's phenomenal in this episode.
I hope that she sticks. I think she's going to stick the whole season, it would seem to me.
I read somewhere that they only had her booked for 5 episodes.
Okay.
So my hope is that they deploy her carefully, because she's awesome. She's just, because she brings a unfiltered moral righteousness they haven't had since Hale was killed. And that was something that this show really needed from about season 3 on, was somebody who could stand up, and instead of being like, "Well, they're anti-heroes, but, you know, they're so human, they love their children, and, you know, they drink milk from the carton, and they're just small businessmen who want to get ahead." And instead they're like, no, these are people who have chosen, instead of leading quiet lives as, like, legit mechanics or landscape people or small business owners, you know, they've chosen this life where violence and black market economies are de facto, and that's wrong. And it took Hale to say that, and then when he went away, there was kind of a moral vacuum there, and now you've got Patterson who's back, and she's saying, no, it's totally wrong. This is ridiculous, and I can't believe you people even think this is a way you can live.
Right, and I think, you know, because the shock in her face, especially in season 6, when Jax turned himself over.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't expecting that on two fronts.
She's like, he has a conscience? What?
Right. And now, speaking of families,
mm-hmm.
Wendy is now, seems to be fully in the picture, which I kind of always thought, you know, at the end of the day, who really understands Jax? It's going to be Wendy.
You think? Why do you say that?
Well, it just seems like she was already a part of the life. Tara was inducted mm-hmm. into the life.
Yeah. Because my impression of Wendy is that she's never quite sure how to play her cards. Because she's, instead of coming back and worming her way, as it were, into good graces with Jax and Tara and setting up a co-parenting situation, which would have been sane and would have happened if she had gone about it diplomatically, she comes back and she's instantly, you people are terrible parents and I'm sober now and I'm going to go for custody and da-da-da-da-da. And instantly you have Tara freaking out, which sets Jax onto Wendy and makes her mission like three times as hard. And then she grievously misread Tara last season.
Yeah, you know? Well, and the thing is, she the only reason she is in right now is because mm-hmm. Gemma lied for her. Because now Wendy does have an advantage because she mm-hmm. does have information. But again, she doesn't really have any kind of drive except for the kids, but she doesn't ever really act on it. You know, mm-hmm. she never takes the kids or, you know, it's, she never really, she doesn't have any kind of, any real drive or motivation that she acts
Wendy's,
upon.
Yeah, Wendy's not, like you said, Wendy reacts and Wendy gets buffeted around by other people with stronger wills. I think since she left rehab early, that's your smoking gun or your loaded syringe on the table in Act 1. And again, the fact that Gemma chose to stash, oh, we better wrap this up, we're 25 minutes. I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about what you think Gemma's long play is here.
Okay.
And then I also wanted to talk about what you thought about, and then predictions over the, you know, based on a whopping 120 minutes of the first episode.
Right.
But, you know, the fact that, again, Gemma didn't help get Juice out of town. She stashed him in Wendy's apartment, presumably for time to think. I also think she stashed him there because she's got plans B and C vaguely forming in the back of her head in case Jax didn't buy the, oh, some random Chinese dude, took out the old lady of the King of the Bikers.
Oh.
I think Juice is her safety plan.
I just, going to the last 2 minutes, mm-hmm. That I just, I, but she's already set up so many lies. That it's going to be, I'm a little frustrated because what I'm scared of is, are we just going to be real frustrated because all she's doing is fabricating every episode? And we all know the truth and we got, you know, it's like, Jax, can you see it? I'll tell you a secret. But if it cannot be, that has to be like half of the season. Because I can't handle it being the whole season.
The thing that, the reason I think it's going to be the whole season, I think it's twofold. One, Gemma laid out the stakes in the episode when she said, well, you know, he can't lose his mom on top of the woman he loves, and like neatly ignores the connection between, and I am the one who did that to him. So I think that's going to propel her. And we've all seen, like, through seasons 2 and 3, like the crazy stuff she'll do in the name of motherly love. And also, Sutter loves this character so much. Like he's basically made her everything but a psychic who can fly. And I don't think he's going to close her character arc early. I think we're going to see this dramatic confrontation between mother and son or some such BS like that. And that'll be your series finale.
And she could end up being the last one standing.
Yes.
And that would be kind of my fear.
Well, that's the Shield ending, because I used to I was talking about this with my husband, and I said, you know, the ultimate FU ending to this is that Gemma ends up working like as a night clerk in a gas station somewhere. She's all alone. She's got no son. She's got no grandkids. She's got no club. She's just this washed up old lady who's a social pariah, and she has to live in her own miserable life for the rest of her existence.
Or I could see her at the same time, like that Shield ending shot where mm-hmm. she's got the kids and mm-hmm. they're, you know, a big pullback.
Yeah.
again, that would not be satisfying to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think keeping her alive would actually be a worse thing for that character, because if she can't have her club and her family, she doesn't want to live. And so deprive her of both but keep her alive is honestly worse than death.
That would kind of work. But again, I can't see Jax dying.
Here is my prediction of how it's going to roll out.
Do it.
Jax gets sent away to jail for life. The only way he gets to know his kids is through letters, but he gets sent to jail and he has to keep his head down. He's got no power on the inside because the club is taken down. Why is the club taken down? Because it turns out Rat's been working with the feds or for the feds. That guy is stupidly, scarily competent compared to almost everybody else in that club, and he's always in the right place at the right time. And also my conspiracy theory got kicked into high gear when they made a big deal out about Rat talking about installing Jax's new saddlebags on his bike last season. You do that, that's the perfect chance to plant some bugs and some wires, and no one's ever going to detect them. So my theory is the club gets taken down, Jax goes to jail, Gemma's on the outside. She has no son because he's found out oh my God, my mom killed my wife, so boom, you're dead to me. She's got no son, she's got no club, she's got no access to grandkids.
Wow.
That's how I think it's going to go. And I think Bobby will be like a grizzled bookkeeper in Las Vegas somewhere and like totally hating his life. And it's just there's a real crime and punishment theme that runs through this program. And I think everyone's going to get punished.
And they have to. Ultimately, even, you know, Breaking Bad, everyone, you know, you can only have one survivor in some kind of downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. My bet on Juice.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He will die in episode 10.
Yeah, that drags it out just long enough. I was going to peg it at like 7 because it's kind of the turning point for the season. So we'll see if it's between. We'll see which one of us gets closer to it.
Of course, we have no real knowledge of how that will play out. It is a gamble at the best.
Yes, exactly. Well, we have actually gone to half an hour, which is not bad for our inaugural Flashcast.
Boom.
Boom. And that's it. So predictions for next week. Do you have any?
I think we're going to see Tully for sure. Well, mm-hmm. Maybe not Tully, but definitely we're going to be introduced to the queen of grunge.
Yes. Oh, that's right. The preschool teacher.
Right. Little Courtney yep. Love.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how that plays out.
Yep, we'll see if she starts poking into Gemma's business. So.
And of course, Unser will survive.
For now.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of deal with the devil he makes. All right. Well, that was our inaugural Sons of Anarchy Flashcast. I want to thank Philip Mozeliak again for joining me. And please look forward to hearing from us every Thursday. All right. Thanks a lot for your time.
Rev your engines.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Doggy boy, this place is fantastic.